Okay, this week's parsha is Parshas Matas Maaseh. We'll begin on page 902. Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, chapter 31, verse 1. Vayidaber Hashem o Moshe Leimar. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Nekom Nikmas B'nei Yisrael, take vengeance for the Jewish people, or of the Jewish people, Me'eis HaMidyanim, from the Midianites. After that, you shall be gathered on to your people, which means after that, you will die. So, as we know, Parshas Palak, Parshas Pinchas, had the story of when the Moabite women were seducing the Jewish men into idolatry, and how Pinchas killed the prince Zimri of the tribe of Shimon, who was cohabiting with a Midianite princess. So there was involvement of both the Moabite women and the Midianite women. At least this Midianite princess was involved. And now, Hashem, and now, actually, this was already mentioned before in Parshas Pinchas, but now in this week's Parshas, what actually happens, when Hashem says to Moshe, now you have to take vengeance for the Jewish people, for what the Midianites did to them. And Rashi actually points out that even though we know that the Moabites were involved in bringing this kind of destruction upon the Jewish people, but they did so because they were afraid. I mean, basically, the Jewish people were on their border. According to the way Rashi brings down, the Jewish people were not going to be conquering them, but they were kind of annoying them in certain ways. And therefore, their involvement in trying to bring down the Jewish people was something that was, you know, relevant to them. The Midianites had nothing to worry about. They weren't on the Midianite border. There was no worry for the Midianites about the Jewish people. Their involvement was solely to bring the Jewish people down, and therefore, they're the ones considered degrading the honor of the Jewish people and degrading the honor of Hashem, and therefore, this kind of vengeance was meant to be taken from the Midianites. Now, the Pasuk says that Hashem says to Moshe, take the vengeance of the Jewish people from the Midianites. Achar teyasef alamecha, after that you shall be gathered onto your people. That phrase, you shall be gathered onto your people, means afterwards you shall pass on. So Hashem is making a connection of sorts between this war with the Midianites and then Moshe's passing. So the Ramban, Nachmanides, he explains the psuk, this in the following way. Basically, he says that Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, it was decreed upon him that he would not enter the land of Israel. And whatever had to be done on the other side of the Jordan, meaning on the non-Israel side of the Jordan, was really in Moshe's hands. That was really Moshe's responsibility. He conquered that entire land, that whole area of Transjordan. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu conquered, because that was for him to do. Meaning, Joshua was going to be the one to take over when things had to be done in Israel, but in the land of Israel. But Moshe took care of everything before that. And one of the things that Moshe had to take care of now was this idea of the Nekama, of the vengeance of the Jewish people against the Midianites. So basically, the point Hashem is saying to Moshe is that this is your final deed. This is your final deed on behalf. This is the final thing that you're going to have to take care of for the Jewish people. And afterwards, you pass on. Afterwards, you're going to pass on the mantle. So the point here is that you take care of this, and afterwards you will pass on. In essence, the question could be, why isn't Yeshua doing this? You know, why isn't Yeshua doing this? And the answer with Joshua, the one who's going to be following Moshe, why isn't Joshua doing this? And the answer is because Moshe Rabbeinu now, if it's on this side of the Jordan River, he takes care of it. And Hashem is telling him, you take care of it. This is the final thing that you will take care of on behalf of the Jewish people. That's one thing that that the Ramban says. Afterwards, the Ramban says that, and this is a very interesting explanation, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe, Shachalak HaKadosh Baruch Hu kavod zeh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe this final honor. Shireh v'yismach tzadik chazanakam. Quote, that the tzaddik should see and rejoice, the righteous man, referring to Moshe, should see and rejoice that he can see the vengeance of the Jewish people being taken. V'zatam achar teyasef alamecha, and this is what it means, afterwards you should be gathered onto your people. Meaning, in essence, it's time for you to go. It's time for you to go. However, I'm going to allow you, I'm going to extend your life, so that you should be able to see the vengeance of the Jewish people against the Midianites. So the Ramban says, we've got, number one, the idea that Moshe takes care of everything on the eastern side of the Jordan, which was conquering the land and also taking care taking vengeance of the Midianites. Not Yeshua. Yeshua's job is to conquer Israel and to divide Israel. And also, Moshe is being given a chance to see the vengeance against the Midianites. And that's what it means. Afterwards, you shall be gathered unto your people. In essence, you should be gathered on already now. Gathered in already now. But I'm going to extend your time so that you should be able to see this vengeance. It would very well could have been, according to this explanation, Yeshua could have done it. And Yeshua should have done it, because it was time for Moshe to pass on. But to give Moshe the chance to see the vengeance against the Midianites, that's why, instead, his life was extended. You'll take care of this, and then after that, you'll be gathered onto your people.
Take a vengeance against the Midianites.
Yeah.
Because they seduced the...
They were involved in it.
The Jewish men that were seduced, if they didn't want to be seduced, they wouldn't have been seduced.
What does that have to do with the punishment for the Midianites? It doesn't make them any less innocent. It doesn't make them innocent. Those men actually, many of them died.
Died, yeah.
Okay, they were punished. That doesn't mean that the Midianites are innocent. They were tried. They seduced them to idolatry.
They did a mitzvah to pray to God, and you don't. You pray to an idol. It's not somebody else's problem. It's your problem.
No, it's...
You're going to be able to
control yourself. What if somebody enticed you to worship idols? Is that person responsible for enticing you? 100% is. So that's a pasuk in the Torah. The Torah says you can't cause someone to stumbling. There's no excuse to say, well, you know, he should take care of himself. He should take care of himself, and he bears his responsibility. But if you cause him, then you bear responsibility for that also. We need to discuss a little bit this Ramban's explanation, in which he quotes this when he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe the opportunity to see and to rejoice that he saw the vengeance. Is rejoicing over revenge a Jewish trait that we say Moshe Rabbeinu was given a chance to see the revenge? You know, that doesn't sound like a Jewish trait, that Moshe should get a chance to see the vengeance. When I heard this question years ago, this explanation I'm going to share with you for Reb Chaim Stein, the yeshiva that tells the yeshiva. I was there in the summer. This goes back over 30 years ago, and he brought this out, and he brought this out in a very interesting way. You know, he gave an example that, I mean, this had to happen a while ago, but he said that there was a time where there was a terrorist attack somewhere, and the terrorist, after killing the person he wanted to kill, licked up the blood of the person that he killed. Revenge. He mentioned that after the Bolshevik Revolution, when the workers rebelled against their bosses, so a worker forced his boss to go on his hands, his knees, and lick the garbage. You know, that's revenge, right? That's getting your revenge.
Getting even.
So getting even, whatever you want to call it, getting your revenge. What does it mean that Moshe Rabbeinu is giving the opportunity to see the revenge? Why would Moshe want to see revenge? And the answer is that the vengeance we're talking about has absolutely no connection to the two examples that I gave, where a person is trying to get even. It's something that he wants for himself. It's something personal. And therefore, for to take care of his, to placate his personal needs, to placate his anger, to be able to get that good feeling of getting back at someone, that's not what we're talking about. The pasuk says, when Hashem speaks to Moshe, Hashem says, take the vengeance of the Jewish people from the Midianites. And when Moshe then goes ahead and tells the Jewish people to get the army together, which is Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, Moshe says, Vayadaber Moshe la'am leimar, Moshe spoke to the people saying, Hechaltzume yitchem anashim latzava, arm, bring together from amongst you men for the army, v'yu al Midyan, they will go against Midyan, l'seis nikmas Hashem b'Midyan, to be able to take the vengeance of God against Midyan. Hashem calls it the vengeance of the Jewish people. Moshe calls it the vengeance of God. Why is that? As Rashi points out, Shehoemid Keneged Yisrael, one who stands up, one who rises against the Jewish people, it's like rising up against God. The honor that we're talking about here is not this personal vengeance. It's not a personal. There's not a personal desire to get even. But rather, it's about seeing the honor of the Jewish people and the honor of God being restored. The Midianites brought terrible calamity and shame upon the Jewish people and brought a terrible desecration of God's name. When God's chosen people can fall in such a way and so many of them die because of that, that's a desecration of God's name. And the Midianites understood that. And therefore, what Moshe Rabbeinu wants to see is not a personal revenge. He doesn't even want to just see a revenge because, oh, those are my fellow Jews and I want to get back at him. It was all about being able to see the glory of Hashem being restored. And the glory of the Jewish people was the glory of Hashem being restored. And how does that happen? Yes, that happens when there is a punishment. When those people who desecrate God's name are punished for what they did, that basically shows you that you cannot tamper with the honor of God. And when you see that vengeance being taken, again, it's not personal, but it's rather seeing the honor of God and the Jewish people being restored. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to see, and that is what Hashem gave Moshe the chance for. When the Ramban says that Moshe has been given the honor to see and to rejoice that over the vengeance, he's not rejoicing over vengeance, he's rejoicing over the fact that the glory, that the honor and the glory of Hashem and the Jewish people has been restored, because those who perpetrated such a terrible crime against the Jewish people and against the glory of God have been punished. And that's what it means, that's the meaning of the Ramban, that Hashem gave Moshe the chance to see the vengeance against Midian. Okay. Now, so that's the Ramban's explanation about the connection between Moshe's death and mentioning, afterwards you will be gathered onto your people. And that was, again, the Moshe Rabbeinu's life is being extended to give him the chance to see the vengeance against Midian. Rashi points out, Rashi actually points out in Pasuk Gimel that after Hashem says to Moshe, take the vengeance, and then you'll be gathered unto your people. And Pasuk Gimel verse 3 reads, Moshe spoke to the people. Rashi comments on that, Moshe spoke, even though Moshe heard that his death was dependent on this war with Midian, he right away took care of it. He got onto it right away. So Rashi is telling us here that Moshe was told that this act of Midian, of fighting against Midian, will be your final act. When that act is done, you will pass away. Rashi, even though Moshe Rabbeinu heard it was this, you know, right after this would happen, he would die. He didn't delay. He didn't delay. Could he have delayed?
Yeah.
Maybe he couldn't have. I don't know. Could he have delayed? Maybe he wasn't allowed to, maybe he shouldn't have delayed, but again, it's normal. He'll be a little bit hesitant. And Moshe Rabbeinu showed no hesitancy. You know, that maybe that's what it means. Maybe Rashi means that Moshe Rabbeinu right away got to it. You know, when you know you're going to die after this, it'll be normal to, you know, not to rush into it. You know, not necessarily to purposely delay as much as you just wouldn't rush into it. But Moshe Rabbeinu has this mitzvah to do. He gets into it right away, and that's it. And he doesn't delay. Doesn't hesitate. But the answer is, many of the Mefarshim, I think the Medrash points out, that no, actually there was a very strong connection here. There was a strong connection here in the sense that Moshe Rabbeinu's death depends on the war with Midian. The longer there is no war with Midian, the more Moshe Rabbeinu can live. Which means it doesn't mean that Moshe Rabbeinu will never do it. It's got to do it. It's got to be eventually be taken care of, right? And he's not entering the land of Eretz Yisrael, that we know. So Moshe Rabbeinu, really, if he wanted to give himself some more time to study Torah and do mitzvahs and help the Jewish people, if he wanted to, there could have been a certain amount of time that if he wanted to, he could have done so. Moshe Rabbeinu theoretically could have delayed. He could have delayed and given himself more time. But yeah, and then eventually he'll get to it. But the point is, he didn't do that. Moshe didn't do that. Moshe understood something has to be done now, mitzvah has to be done now, and he was ready to do it right away, even though that meant that his time in this world would be shortened. Now the question is, why is there such a connection? What is the basis of this connection? Why is there this connection between this war with Midian and Moshe Rabbeinu's death? You know, the Ramban told us, because the Ramban seems to be saying, well, Moshe really should have died, but we gave him an extension. That's the Ramban's explanation. But again, this is the question. Why is there this connection between the war of Midian and Moshe's death? So the commentary of Baruch Hayim gives what we would probably call that, what we could call a bit of a mystical explanation. And he says that the term Achar Te'asef Alamecha, afterwards you should be gathered onto your people, doesn't just mean to die. This phrase of gathered onto your people means that when Moshe Rabbeinu passes on and his neshama comes up to Shemayim, the question is, will he immediately be able to take his rightful place? Or will he not be able to immediately take his rightful place because something went wrong during his lifetime, and it has to be rectified before he would be able to take his rightful place in the afterlife, in the Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden. So therefore, the Aruch Chaim says that Moshe Rabbeinu's death being dependent on this war of Midian, Hashem is telling him, this is your chance to rectify something that you messed up on. This is your chance to rectify. If you will be willing to do this, basically, on your life, this is what's called. If you will do this, and I think he means to say, one second. Okay, I don't know if he means to say that Moshe Rabbeinu is rectifying this by being willing to give up his life to do this. But what Hashem is telling Moshe is, you have a chance now to rectify what you didn't do right before. And once you do this, this will rectify, and then you'll be gathered onto your people. You'll get your rightful place in Gan Eden, in paradise. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu do wrong, or what didn't he do that he should have done, that now taking the vengeance of Midian will help? Says the Aruch Chaim, and this is based on the Medrash. The Medrash doesn't necessarily say this point, I don't think. But we know that when Zimri took Cozbi to commit a sin with her, so what does it say when Zimri told everybody that he's doing it? Right? So it says, everybody's standing there and crying. No one's doing anything. They didn't do anything, right? Who did something? Pinchas. Pinchas goes over to Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, Rebbe, didn't you teach us that when a person does that, you're supposed to, if you're zealous for the honor of God, you're supposed to punish him? And Moshe Rabbeinu said, yeah, and you brought it up, you do it. But the Medrash points out that Moshe Rabbeinu should have done it, but he didn't. Rafu Yadav, he was weak. For some reason, he didn't have it in him to do it. And that was something, says the Ramban, that was something that Moshe Rabbeinu failed with. He should have done it. For whatever reason that he didn't do it. But he should have done it. And because he did not be the way, he wasn't the one to kill Zimri, who was again doing the sin with the Midianite woman, he didn't do it when he should have done it. Now Hashem says, okay, here's your chance to make up for it. Here's your chance to make up for it. You now Nekarim Nikmas Midian, you now take care of this vengeance of Midian, you now take care of punishing Midian for what they did, and that will make up for the fact that you did not kill Zimri and Cozbi, the Midianite princess. So the Achar Te'asef, according to the Aruch Chaim, is, again, It's not necessarily the point, like Rashi says, that Moshe Rabbeinu's death is dependent on the war of Midian. It's not the death that's dependent, but if Moshe Rabbeinu wants to pass on and immediately get his rightful place in Gan Eden that he deserves, this is the key. You take the vengeance of Midian, make up for the fact that you did not punish Zimri and Cusbi, and that will now make up for what you didn't do before. After that, you'll be gathered onto your people. You'll take your rightful place in Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden. Okay. Now I'm going to share with you another explanation that comes from the Sefer Shari Ora. And he makes an explanation, and he offers an explanation to this connection between the passing of Moshe was dependent on this war with Midian. Why was it connected? So, in order to do this, he actually takes us back a couple of parshas, back to the May Meriva, back to the time when Moshe hit the rock. Right? The time that Hashem told him to speak to the rock, and he hit the rock, and because he didn't, and afterwards Hashem said, you didn't sanctify my name, and therefore you are not going to enter the land of Israel. Now, whenever we talk about this story, this episode, so basically we say, well, Moshe was told to speak, and he hit, and because he spoke, instead of speaking, that's the problem. That's what Rashi learns. Rashi learns that somehow or another, speaking to the rock would have made a greater sanctification of God's name than hitting the rock. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do that, therefore Moshe Rabbeinu was punished. And all the commentaries struggle with, okay, he didn't do that. Is that so terrible that because of that he couldn't enter the land of Israel? So there are many, many explanations as to what exactly went wrong here. And some of the explanations basically don't touch on the idea of the problem was hitting instead of speaking. They come on to other explanations as to what Moshe Rabbeinu did wrong that's considered a lack of sanctifying God's name. So he cites the, this is the Ar HaChaim says this explanation, and he cites the Ikrim, the Sefer HaIkrim. It's a commentary. The Sefer HaIkrim is a commentary on many topics in Torah. And this is the Ikrim's explanation as to what Moshe Rabbeinu did wrong. So the explanation they say is like this. What Moshe Rabbeinu did wrong was the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, when the Jewish people didn't have water, what Moshe Rabbeinu should have done is, right away, he should have gone and taken care that the rock should give water. And once Moshe Rabbeinu saw, Ki chet mi merivahu al shloi kiddush Moshe yisparach, hikashara ki ha'am tzami lamayim, ha'yam aroi l'ish kazeh l'kadesh me yisparach, l'aseis me atzmei leitzi mayim me'asela. You know what the problem with Moshe was? Moshe, when the Jewish people said we have no water, what did Moshe do? He went to God. And God said, okay, speak to the rock. Moshe shouldn't have done that. When the Jewish people needed the water, Moshe Rabbeinu, because who he was, should have gone over to the rock. There was a rock that gave the water. The rock stopped giving the water. And Moshe should have gone over and brought water out of the rock on his own, without Hashem telling him. That's what he should have done. By going, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have immediately responded to the Jewish people's need for water, if he would have responded right away, which he could have responded on his own, so to speak, he could have brought out this miracle without asking God, he could have done it right away. If he would have just done it on his own, that would have sanctified God's name. Now that he didn't do it on his own, but he actually had to wait for Hashem to tell him what to do, that was a lack of sanctifying God's name. That was the problem. A brand new approach that says that Moshe Rabbeinu's sin by the water was not about hitting the rock and hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock. The problem was that as soon as the Jewish people needed water, Moshe on his own should have gone, brought water out of the rock, instead of waiting for Hashem to tell him what to do.
It was a life and death situation.
Well,
in that situation, you had to do, you know.
Yeah, but it doesn't, again. Yeah, I mean, they weren't going to, when Moshe Rabbeinu waited for Hashem to respond, they weren't going to die. I mean, yeah. You know, they weren't going to die from that. But something similar to what you're saying, it seems to be that, again, he should have responded right away.
Mesiris nefesh.
Yeah, but again, that's what it seems to be. It seems to be that Moshe should have responded right away on his own. Well, again, the miracle was going to seemingly be the same miracle. Wasn't it going to be a different miracle? At the end of the day, they have to get the water out of the rock. And at the end of the day, that's a miracle. But Moshe shouldn't have waited for God. You should have done it right away.
He didn't say because he did it before.
That's clearly because of that. Hashem told him then. But here
once
the point.
He told him once, he knew that could happen.
Okay, so that point, good. So the point is.
It could happen.
Fine.
He should have gone and he would.
Fine. Now the question is, though, again, why is that so serious? Why was it so important that Moshe should do it on his own? Okay, you know, instead of doing it on his own, he did what he always did. he waited for God to tell him what to do. He went to Hashem. Hashem tells him what to do. You know, again, the rock stopped giving the water because Miriam died. The rock stopped giving water. Okay, so instead of, the same way the first time Hashem told him and many other times Hashem tells him before he does anything, that's what he did now. What was so wrong by the fact that he didn't do it on his own? So the Shari Eira wants to explain this with the comment of the Beis HaChachma back in Parshas Korach. And that is that the commentary of the Beis HaChachma points out that Moshe Rabbeinu, by the story of Korach, did something that he never did before. Any other miracle that Moshe Rabbeinu performed, Moshe never did it on his own. It was always Hashem telling him to do it. The plagues, the splitting of the Red Sea, whatever he did Moshe before, he never just did it. He went ahead, Hashem told him to do this, and now Moshe, as the agent of Hashem, the prophet and agent of Hashem, he now goes ahead and brings forth a certain miracle. Other prophets didn't work that way. The Beis HaChachma cites in the Sefer Yehoshua, in the book of Joshua, right? When Joshua was having a war, I can't remember with whom, but the sun was setting, and what did Joshua say to the sun?
Stop.
Shemesh Rivendam, don't set. They didn't say anything there about Hashem going to ask Hashem, what should I do? And Hashem says, don't do that. Basically, he does it, And Hashem fulfills what he says. Okay? Eliyahu bar HaKarmel, Elijah the prophet of Mount Carmel. Also, Hashem didn't tell him what to do. He went ahead and he had this contest, so to speak, with the prophets, with the false prophets of the idol. And then he said, you know, he did his thing and he said Hashem should bring down a fire, brought down a fire. He didn't go first to ask Hashem. When Shmuel HaNavi wanted to chastise the Jewish people and bring down rain and storms to show them what they did wrong, he didn't first speak to Hashem. He brought it down. He said it and he brought it down, and Hashem carried out his wish. So other prophets didn't ask Hashem first. They did with the power of prophecy, and Hashem brought it about. Moshe Rabbeinu never did that until the story of Korach. Ramosha says that Hashem should make a creation and the land should open its mouth and swallow up Korach. There he didn't go first to Hashem and say what to do.
He told Hashem do it this way.
Well, the question is why? How come all other times Moshe Rabbeinu first goes to Hashem and Hashem tells him, so to speak, what to do, and then he does it, but by Korach he did it differently? Why is that? So the Beis HaChachma explains like this. The Beis HaChachma explains that, as we know, when Moshe experienced prophecy, he experienced prophecy in a completely different level than other prophets. Moshe Rabbeinu was completely awake and with his senses in complete control, and at the same time he is experiencing prophecy and performing miracles with the power of prophecy. Moshe Rabbeinu is doing all this like a regular person, like as Hashem says, they speak pal, mouth to mouth. They speak like two people having a conversation. Other prophets, we know, when they experienced prophecy, was a whole different experience. They basically were asleep. They basically were completely, they lost their senses, right? They were completely separated from their senses. Their neshamas were, to some degree, separated from their physicality. They were not operating with their regular physical senses, and in that state, they experienced prophecy. Now, my understanding what the Beis HaChachma is saying is that when Yeshua, let's say, told the sun to stop, okay? So we picture Yeshua looking at the sun and saying, "Don't go down." Well, it may not be as simple as that. Yeshua is doing it with the power of prophecy. If he's doing it with the power of prophecy, and he's a regular prophet, he's not Moshe Rabbeinu, then this is taking place at some point when Yeshua is not with his senses. He's completely separated from his physicality. And when that's happening, it's very clear that the source of what's happening is
God.
Is Hashem. It's very clear that the source is Hashem. But when Moshe Rabbeinu is doing things, and Moshe Rabbeinu is completely regular and completely normal, right? Moshe Rabbeinu is being the regular being that he is as he experienced prophecies, and through the power of prophecy performs miracles. Moshe Rabbeinu is in a regular state. If Moshe Rabbeinu just does things, then people might think that this is Moshe. This is Moshe's powers. And they can turn Moshe into a deity of sorts. And therefore, Moshe is not going to initiate anything on his own. Moshe Rabbeinu is only going to do things after Hashem tells him to do it. Now, my understanding of that would be that Moshe Rabbeinu, before he does anything, he says, God said this. Moshe Rabbeinu was not, you know, in any way giving any impression that it's him. He's announcing before him, Hashem told me to do this. And by doing so, there's no question of where the power to this comes from. It's not his own power. It's the power of prophecy. It's the power that Hashem is bringing these miracles through him. Okay. It says in Meshech Chachma, but in the case of Korach, Moshe Rabbeinu was not really afraid of being made into a deity, because Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't very popular at that point. Besides the fact that Korach and his whole following were leading a rebellion, we know that before Moshe Rabbeinu told the earth to open up, everybody came to watch. Everybody, Korach had gathered everybody. Everybody came to watch. And as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, Hashem wanted to punish them for doing that because they're doubting Moshe. So Moshe Rabbeinu is the Shaira brings down the Meshech Chachma. And my understanding is that he's saying that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have to be afraid of being turned to a deity at that point of time when they were questioning him, when they were challenging him. More than that, Korach's point was Kola Edo Kulam Kadeshim. Everybody's holy. Everybody's the same. We don't need leaders. Why are you being different? Why do you take things for yourself? Everybody should be able to experience everything equally. They don't want to look at Moshe as something higher than them. And even though not everybody was agreeing to that, but as we do see, everybody came to watch, everybody was questioning, everybody was waiting to see, maybe Korach's right. And at that point, again, they were to a certain degree doubting Moshe Rabbeinu. They were doubting his legitimacy as the prophet that he was claiming to be. And therefore, Moshe at that point didn't have to worry that they're going to start making him into a deity for doing something on his own. That's how he says it. He didn't have to, when basically they were questioning Moshe, and they were questioning his being the prophet, at that point Moshe didn't have to be concerned that if he does something on his own initiative, so now they are going to turn him to a deity. And my understanding of that is that, you know, one act, it's not one act to make him into a deity, it has to be that they're holding Moshe at a very high level. Hold him at a very high level. At this point of time that they're questioning his whole level, even if it works out at the end, they're not going to start turning him into a deity. Maybe it needs a better explanation, but this is how the Meshech Chachma says it. When they were challenging Moshe Rabbeinu's legitimacy as a prophet, when they were trying to say that everybody should be the same, then no one was in that frame of mind to start making him into a deity if he initiates on his own. And Hashem agrees. So therefore, says the Meshech Chachma, that Moshe Rabbeinu was really going ahead and initiating on his own this miracle, which is something that he should have been doing all the time, like any other prophet. He couldn't do it any other time, because if Moshe did it, there was a danger that he would be considered, that he may be into a deity. By the story of Korach, he didn't have to be concerned about that they were turned into a deity, because they were trying to say everybody should be the same. They were questioning Moshe Rabbeinu as a prophet, and therefore at that point he didn't have to worry about anybody now elevating him into something that he wasn't. Okay, says the Meshech Chachma, but if that's the Cheshbon, so that means like this. That means when Moshe Rabbeinu was challenged, he on his own went and initiated a miracle. Okay? Now, after that whole story of Korach is done with, what now should Moshe Rabbeinu be doing? Should he be going back to his old way? of not initiating, to not make him into a deity? It would seem that way, right? You know, the story of Korach is over, and any other thing that has to be done afterwards, you would say, okay, now you should go back to what he was doing before. Says Meshech Chachma, no. Especially in this case now, where the Jewish people are lacking water, if Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't initiate on his own, someone's going to say, for himself, he'll initiate it. But for the Jewish people, he won't. In other words, the problem by Moshe Rabbeinu not initiating by the water when the Jewish people needed it was that Moshe Rabbeinu now could possibly give someone to say that, you know, that for himself, he'll initiate a miracle. But when it's not for himself, when it's a need for the Jewish people, he won't initiate a miracle on his own. That was the problem. The problem was that if someone would be able to say about Moshe, again, the greatest prophet of God, if someone would be able to say about Moshe that he didn't initiate the miracle because he only does it for himself, not for others, that is a lack of sanctifying God's name. If Moshe Rabbeinu is not going to act like that right away, he's going to turn to God, he's not going to right away respond to the Jewish people, that could create the possibility of someone saying, Moshe only initiates for himself, not for others, and that was the problem. So the problem of not initiating on his own wasn't just a question of how quick would he respond, how quick would he take care of the Jewish people. It was actually creating a possible impression that Moshe Rabbeinu initiates miracles for himself, but not on behalf of others. Therefore, says the Shabri Ara, we can now explain as to why Moshe's death is dependent on taking the vengeance for Midian. Because now Hashem says to Moshe, now you need to show the Jewish people that when you do something for them, you're ready to go all the way. You know that your death comes with the war against Midian. And once the war of Midian is done, that means now it's time for you to pass on. And you're ready to do that. You're ready to go ahead and take the vengeance of the Jewish people from Midian, even though it means that will now shorten your time on this world. That would now rectify what went wrong in Mein Meriva. If in Mein Meriva someone could think that Moshe was only concerned about himself and not about others, now was his chance to show it wasn't that way. Because he's ready to stand up for the honor of the Jewish people, even though it means that his life is going to end once he does that. And therefore the connection or the dependence of Moshe's life, or actually Moshe's death, coming upon this war against Midian, and that in essence, Moshe Rabbeinu, if he would have delayed it, it would have been delayed, and he would have lived longer. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't do that. Moshe Rabbeinu is now ready right away to stand up for the honor of the Jewish people, even though it means his life ending, and that is where he shows that he cares, that he does care about the Jewish people, even though it means his life being shortened because of that. That is how the Shari Ira makes this explanation, the connection between Moshe's death and this war with Midian. Now, the Psukim continue, and that the war was fought. And if you take a look on page 904, Pasuk Ches, verse 8, so it tells us that there were five kings of Midian that were killed. And the end of the Pasuk says, Ve'es Bilam ben Ba'ar Hargu Becharev. It says that they killed the kings of Midian. Then it says, and Bilam, the son of Ba'ar, they killed by sword. Now, so somehow or another, Bilam showed up over there by this war. He was killed. Now, the Aruch Chaim points out that really, it could have, when it was listing and saying that all the five kings died with everybody else, and they could have said, and Bilam. Yeah. Bilam with them. Pasuk didn't have to say, and Bilam they killed by sword. Why does the Pasuk point out, and Bilam, Hargu Becharev, they killed them by the sword? So, the Aruch Chaim explains like this. Aruch Chaim explains, okay, first of all, there's two things. Why not just bunch Bilam together with the other kings dying, being killed? And then, it says, they killed them by sword. Why do we need to know they did it by sword? So the Aruch Chaim points out that there's a medrash that, again, what was Bilam doing there? So one explanation is, Bilam came to get paid by Balak. That's one explanation. But the other explanation given by the Medrash is that Bilam knew the Jewish people were about to fight a war with Midian, and he tried to convince them not to fight the war. And he said to them that basically when there is all 600,000 of you, when you were basically at your full amount, you couldn't do anything against the Midianites. They came down, they made you sin, they made thousands of people die. You weren't able to withstand them when you were at your full strength. And now, after you've lost so many people, you think you're going to be able to do it? Their response to Bilam was, psh, took care of him. That was their response. The fact that the Pasuk is now pointing out, making Bilam separate, is trying to point out that Bilam met his fate separately. He met his fate separately. His fate wasn't part of the war. It was a separate thing. When Bilam decided to continue doing his thing of discouraging the Jewish people and trying to bring down the Jewish people, that was the point where he was killed. So his death was separate from the king's, according to the Medrash. Why does it mention they killed them by sword? It says before, I mean, it could have just said, and they killed Bilam. Why do you have to mention by sword? Says the Arachayim. It says by sword, Loimar Shebitlu Kshafav Be'erech Yisrael Vargu Begashmi. The power of Bilam was that he was a sorcerer. He knew black magic. That was his power. And therefore, you know, one might have said that somehow or another, if they're going to kill Bilam, they have to be able to fight him back with the same kind of thing. And the answer is that the Jewish people were able to nullify his power and bring his end like a regular person. They killed him at the end like they'd kill anybody. No matter what kind of supernatural powers he had, they were able to negate those powers and bring his end like anybody else.